This episode is brought to you by Oddmos Pizza in Canby. Handmade awesome pizza plus craft beer, cider, and wine delivered. Call them today at 503-266-8444.
Welcome to the Canby Now podcast.
Your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans. And its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Columbia Distributing could be receiving a sizable tax break on its new 530,000 square foot facility under construction in the Canby Pioneer Industrial Park. It's called the Strategic Investment Zone, or SIZ, and it allows for some property taxes to be abated on developments that spend more than $25 million on projects in Clackamas County. Here's how it works. Companies who qualify will be expected to pay the full amount of property taxes on the first $25 million of their investment. Beyond that, any further taxes due may be abated, a fancy word for temporarily eliminated, for up to 15 years. In the case of Columbia Distributing's new facility, these savings could be substantial. A budget for the project provided by the Oregon-based company estimated their investment for the new building and land to be in excess of $62.3 million, more than twice the SIZ's cap of $25 million, plus an additional $6 million for equipment. To offset the impacts of the losses of these tax dollars, companies granted SIZ status are required to pay a community service fee each year equal to 25% of the tax savings. This amount itself is also capped at no more than $500,000. The program was established in Clackamas County in August 2010 as part of Business Oregon's Strategic Investment Program. But Columbia Distributing is the first company to take advantage. The company's application for the SIZ must be approved by the Canby City Council and Business Oregon, with the main purpose of their decision being determining whether Columbia has met the criteria necessary to qualify for the program. They are scheduled to hear the matter at their regular meeting on Wednesday night. Columbia, which has been in the beverage business since 1935, services over 22,000 retail customers in Oregon, Washington, and California. They had been searching for a new home to consolidate their Portland area operations since acquiring the Mount Hood Beverage Company in 2008. They ultimately settled on Canby and began advancing plans for their massive investment in the community under the codename Project Shakespeare. Columbia expects to begin moving into the facility in late spring of 2020 and be fully operational by October. The facility will serve the entire Portland metro area, along with Salem, a substantial portion of the Columbia Gorge, and the Northern Oregon coast. The facility will also serve as a hub for Columbia branches in Medford, Springfield, Bend, and Pendleton. Once fully operational, Columbia expects to employ roughly 300 full-time employees out of the facility, which will operate around the clock. These employees will receive, pick, and deliver an estimated 16 million cases of product per year. Canby's newest store is now open at the former location of the Premier Pawn and Gun Shop on Highway 99E, bringing a quality selection of overstocked and liquidated items at closeout prices, along with a capable presence on social media. I mean, to be honest, they've pretty much been crushing it. Moondoggy's Overstock and Liquidation held a short, soft opening before the holidays last month. then opened for good on January 6th. They offer a wide inventory of clothing, furniture, outdoor and home goods, and other items listed at well below retail prices. Their selections change frequently, which they hope encourages customers to check back frequently and see what's new, according to Whitney Altman, one of the owner's two daughters, who handle their social media accounts. Being in a small town allows us the opportunity to really get to know our customers, she said. Our hope is that people want to come back just to say hi and see what we have this week. Nothing beats the looks on their faces when they see good, high-quality products at such a discounted price. Moondoggies is a family-owned business. Altman said the owners let her and her sister handle the socials because they prefer the more traditional route of meeting people in person. The business itself isn't new for them, but having a storefront is. We've been buying overstock items for about 10 years now and mainly selling online via eBay, Altman said. We moved to Cambie last year and realized this would be the perfect town to open a storefront in. We haven't had a store in the past, but we are really enjoying it so far. Altman said the store gets new inventory in almost weekly, so regular customers will always be seeing new things. Now to the burning question. Some of our wiser and more experienced readers and listeners may have already figured this out, but I was clueless. Where does the name come from? The answer, of course, is Gidget. The 1959 film that spawned the entire beach party movie genre and made surfing culture mainstream in the US. Moondoggy, played by hunk James Darren, was one of the main characters and Gidget's love interest. We heard the name while watching Gidget about 25 years ago and liked it, Altman explained. Later on, down the road, when we were signing up for an account online, it just stuck with us and we've used it ever since. Moondoggies is open from 9 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. Monday through Friday and 9 to 5 on Saturday. So surf on over sometime and check them out. Ding! The armed robber nicknamed the Opening Bell Bandit, believed to be responsible for no less than 7 robberies in Clackamas, Multnomah, and Washington counties, has been caught. He has been identified as Christian David Perry, 49, of Happy Valley. West Linn PD bestowed the nickname on him for his habit of robbing stores and restaurants in the early morning hours, shortly after they've opened for business. However, he evidently broke from that pattern at his latest crime. He was arrested following a robbery at around 5:30 p.m. Saturday, January 4th, at the Sun's Up Tanning Salon on Southwest Pacific Highway in Tigard. The suspect entered the salon armed with what was described as a screwdriver. He confronted an employee and demanded money. While the suspect was removing money from the register, a customer approached. The suspect threatened him and lunged at him with the screwdriver, police say, and then fled the scene. His description matched those of other robberies linked to the Opening Bell Bandit. White male, approximately 5'10 and 250 pounds, wearing a ski mask, hoodie, and gloves. Perry was tracked with the aid of a canine officer from the Hillsborough Police Department. Police say he was located a short distance away where he was taken into custody. Perry also had a felony warrant from the Oregon State Parole Board for a prior robbery. He was booked at the Washington County Jail on charges of first-degree robbery, unlawful use of a weapon, and menacing. He is likely to also face charges in other jurisdictions for robberies linked to the Opening Bell Bandit, including the Caddy Car Wash in West Linn, a Subway in Gladstone, and another in Portland, a Carl's Jr. in Happy Valley, a Pizza Hut in Portland, and Slingshot's Espresso in Clackamas. A Portland family is grieving the loss of 2 young children this week. A 47-year-old man, later identified as Jeremy Stiles, was holding his 7-year-old daughter and 4-year-old son on the shore at Falcon Cove, near the county line between Clatsop and Tillamook, when all 3 were hit by a wave shortly and swept out to sea. The incident occurred shortly after noon on Sunday. An officer from the Manzanita Police Department was first on the scene to find Stiles and his daughter, still in the ocean and struggling to get to shore. The officer bravely dove in and was able to rescue the girl. Both were transported by an ambulance to Providence Seaside Hospital, where, sadly, the 7-year-old daughter was pronounced dead. The 4-year-old son has not been located, despite an exhaustive search by the U.S. Coast Guard and other agencies, which continued through Sunday. The National Weather Service has issued high surf warnings over the weekend as the Oregon coast was hit with massive waves, up to 30 feet tall, and especially high spring tides, commonly known as king tides. For latest weather hazards and warnings in our state, visit weather.gov/PQR. The path to restoring public access to Willamette Falls, the largest waterfall in the country not named Niagara, could take a new direction according to a recent update from the Willamette Falls Legacy Project. This is the result of collaboration with the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde, the new owners of the property that lies at the heart of the Legacy Project and Riverwalk, the former site of the Blue Heron Paper Mill. The 23-acre industrial property has been inactive since the Blue Heron Mill was shut in 2011. The site is also located within the ancestral homelands of the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde and holds significant historical and cultural importance. Design development and engineering was already underway for the first phase of a planned riverwalk connecting historic downtown Oregon City and Willamette Falls when the tribes announced their purchase, which has changed the project landscape, literally and figuratively. According to the Legacy Project release, the tribes have pitched the idea of routing visitors along the river to a prominent viewpoint of the falls, instead of the original design, which would have provided access through the middle of the former mill site. Altering the route will fit in better with the tribe's plans for cleanup of the long-abandoned mill site, but it has also pushed back the groundbreaking for the Riverwalk, which had initially been set for this year. The Willamette Falls Legacy Project has worked hard to balance the voices and vision from our communities with the needs of our partners and the intricacies of the project site, said Metro Councilor Christine Lewis. Our strong partnerships and ongoing work will result in a riverwalk we'll all be proud of. The Willamette Falls Legacy Project shared 2 significant project updates last year, one highlighting projected riverwalk costs, and 2, the news that the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde purchased the former mill site and home of the future Willamette Falls Riverwalk. Cost estimating began last spring for the design, engineering, and construction of the first phase of the Riverwalk. It quickly became clear that the funding available to build the first phase wouldn't cover as much ground as projected. The cost to design and build this section of the Riverwalk is still under evaluation, and the tribes, along with the Legacy Project partners, are still exploring funding opportunities. The tribes have applied for $975,000 in grants from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and other partner agencies to assist in further assessments and cleanups. The Legacy Project has already set aside $12.5 million for construction from the original budget that includes contributions from Oregon City, Clackamas County, Metro, the state, the former property owner, and Willamette Falls Trust, a nonprofit working to support the vision at Willamette Falls. Late last year, voters across Greater Portland approved a $475 million bond measure to protect clean water, restore fish and wildlife habitat, and provide opportunities for people to enjoy nature close to home, with $20 million of that to be directed to the Willamette Falls Riverwalk over time. The Camby wrestling team had an impressive showing at the Colton Hawley Invite, finishing second at the annual tournament at Wilsonville High School. It was the Cougs' 4th straight trip to the finals for that tourney, and they missed their 3rd title by only 10 points in the decisive tilt against Silverton. on the road to the finals, Canby, which has been ignored in the OSAA coaches poll thus far this season, despite some impressive performances, took down Alloa and Oregon City, who were last ranked 7th and 10th, respectively, in that same poll. Other teams seeing action at the Colton Holly included Barlow, Lake Oswego, Wilsonville, and Timberline. The Cougs' next challenge will be a duel against Three Rivers League rival Lake Ridge under the lights at Canby High School. It was quite a week for Canby boys and girls basketball teams as they played only one game each to wrap up non-league play. Both on the road, both losses. The boys lost a close one at Sprague, 58-52, while the girls had a tough night against Sheldon, easily a top five team in the state year. They lost 49-33. The ladies open Three Rivers League play on Tuesday with a home match against Tigard, who are 1-9 thus far this season. They'll be on the road Friday versus Lake Ridge. Same lineup for the boys, Tigard Tuesday and Lake Ridge Friday, though they'll be on the road for both games.
More than 1.2 million Americans receive internet, TV, and telephone services from community cooperatives like DirectLink. They believe that their role revolves around partnerships, whether sponsoring a local event, hosting educational classes, or investing in fiber internet technology. DirectLink is here for our community because they are a part of our community.
Beyond just working in Canby, most of DirectLink's employees live here as well. DirectLink's investment in the local area reaches past business interests and extends into the everyday lives of neighbors, friends, and families. Visit them online at directlink.coop to learn more about their communication services and community activities.
We'd like to extend our undying gratitude to Canby Now Plus member Chad Jeremiah Robison. We rely on your monthly contributions to continue doing this work that we love. To find out how you can become one of the coolest people in the world, one of our supporters at Patreon, visit canbynowpod.com/plus.
Apparently I'm not. Okay. My guest on the Canby Conversation today is Cheryl Masick. She's an artist living here in Barlow, and her art is through Cerebral Artwork. She has a really cool style that she's developed. It's very unique to her. She's going to tell us all about it. Hi, Cheryl. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much. Thanks for being on the show. Welcome to the Canby Now Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Have you ever been on a podcast before?
I have not.
Okay. First time.
Yes.
Well, tell us a little bit about what you do, first of all, and then how you got into it.
I am a, technically what you would call a fluid acrylic pour artist, I suppose is the long gist of it. It's abstract art, essentially, at its core. It is comprised of different mediums, if you will. You add paint and some other liquids to make a very fluid type of paint.
I wonder if when people first hear that, like acrylic pour, they think like Jackson Pollock.
Yeah, just like without the splattering.
The splatter, but that's not what you do.
That is not what it is. I mean, literally, it's a very liquefied paint that you put in a cup and pour on a canvas or a board or pretty much anything.
Yeah.
You can decorate. I get a lot of things on the clearance aisle that I'm like, oh, I could pour on this and make something cool.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So folks have, that maybe aren't familiar with the terms, but have probably seen it. Like there's a lot of like coffee tables you can see online that kind of use the resin or method to like kind of fill in the holes. And they do it in a way that's really beautiful and aesthetically appealing.
Yes.
That's a little bit of what you do. But you work with, you said all different things, but I've seen a lot of your work on canvases.
Yes, and that's primarily what I started out with.
Yeah.
And as I've kind of progressed, I really like the wood medium now, which essentially it's a canvas, but it's just made of wood. It's, they call it a cradled wood canvas or a wood board.
I'm not sure I'm familiar with
that.
That's
we'll have to show you some.
Yeah, that'd be great.
And it's a little more forgiving because sometimes with the weight of so much paint that you're pouring onto there,
It affects the canvas.
It can sag.
Yeah.
And some absorption happens a little bit too. So the wood, it's nice because you kind of, you know what you're getting. It's a flat surface. And it on a wall, it's actually a little more, in my eyes, appealing. But, you know, it's art. It's subjective. Everybody has different opinions of what they like and don't like. And,
it's the beauty about art. And also the thing that makes it so much fun to fight about, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's not pretty. That's ugly. No, it's not.
I find things that I typically will love and I'm so excited about that I've done. And I'll go and get my husband.
Right.
Everything I love, typically he hates. Yeah. And everything I hate, typically he loves.
Yeah. That's great. Keeps things spicy. That's
great. There you go.
Cool. Well, you have an interesting journey as an artist and how you got into this. Tell us a story. I assume you were going to do more traditional paint, and then you spilled your bucket, and you're like, let's just go with that. No, I'm just kidding.
Actually, it's not that simple, believe it or not. If you really want to go all the way back, I've always been into art and color, and even in elementary school, I remember wanting to take summer classes that I did painting and all sorts of craft stuff.
Can you tell us where you grew up?
Do you really want to know? I'm one of those from Southern California.
Oh,
originally,
okay.
Yeah.
In the podcast. Well,
yeah, that's it. It's over. but we've been here since 2003.
Cool.
I think. Yeah, we've been here for a while.
Here in Barlow?
No, actually, we were in Molino for a while.
Okay.
We came down from Bellingham, actually.
That's cool.
And then ended up moving to Arizona and then came back knowing we wanted to move to Canby and lived actually in town for many, many years.
Cool.
And then ended up moving here.
Yeah.
And a whole lot of things going on. This is where we ended up planting.
Sure, sure.
So, yeah.
Growing up, did you want to be like an artist professionally, or is this something you enjoyed kind of on the side?
It was always something that I really was interested in. Even through high school, I took every single art class, ceramics class that I could feasibly fit into my schedule.
You were all over the place in terms of medium.
Yes,
yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. And then I went to Long Beach State for a while, and art was my major, along with the psychology. Yeah, there was a lot of reasons we left, but it was definitely the direction I was headed, and then things happen and you move a different direction, and it's tough being an artist and making money. The starving artist term
so hard.
There's a reason why it's there. And I was a veterinary technician for a good 10-15 years. So I had a lot of that going on, and then kids and marriage and all that stuff, and then we moved around a lot, and it definitely metamorphosized. And the pouring part started because I was searching around on YouTube. I can't even remember what it was at this point.
When was this?
This was 2017, I think.
Fairly recently.
Yeah. I think it was 2017.
Okay.
I had never even heard of fluid pouring.
Yeah.
Most likely, I was searching for something that had to do with, like, cake decorating would be my guess. Because there's some overlap, because I've actually started pouring on cakes as well in my spare time.
As a prank? And then they bite this?
No.
Like, this is resin. This is an icing.
It's actually called mirror glaze. It's an actual edible food.
Yeah.
No, it's food. It's made of sugar, essentially, and condensed milk.
Yeah.
But you can pour just like fluid paint pouring.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. So it's probably where I was, headed looking at something. And then this thing popped up to watch, like, acrylic fluid pouring. What is that?
Right.
And so I started watching it, and it just fascinated me. The one thing I love about it is that you don't have to have a formal education. You don't have to know how to draw a perfect person or a perfect, whatever your subject is. It's very free.
You just described me as an artist.
It's very freeing.
Yeah.
Cool. There's no right or wrong.
Yeah. And you can produce something that is beautiful.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what I think really drew me to it.
Yeah.
So I played around a lot with all these recipes I saw online.
Yeah, that's really interesting to me, just because of your history with art. Like, you feel like you would lean more into something that has a higher learning curve.
Right.
You wouldn't want to do something. I spent my whole life, like, learning to be an artist, and now I'm doing this thing that an idiot like me could jump into.
Part of it may have come because my previous I was a business owner where it was in the, it was kind of art related. Mm-hmm. I had a retail business, and I think I just wanted something that I didn't have to think so
right.
hard.
Right. Sure.
And just kind of, you know, be free of all the constraints that I had cool. in that. So yeah. that may be why I wanted something a little yeah. less mind control.
Right. Yeah. And let's not sell you too short. I'm sure in your 3 years of doing this, you've developed a certain style and technique.
It was rough looking in the beginning. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. yeah. It is totally different now versus what it was then. It's definitely more refined. And
yeah.
I've learned little tricks and things over the years yeah. of doing it. And a lot of, I mean, don't get me wrong. There's a lot of paint that went in the trash, you know, and canvases. I mean, that's the nice thing too with this is that you can re-pour over a canvas
okay.
Multiple times. You just gotta let it dry.
Yeah.
Or you can do it immediately and just swipe it all off and start again.
Yeah.
And then you can reuse the paint underneath as well, so it's not a total waste.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was a lot of start overs yeah. for sure. Yeah.
So that's your that's kind of the basics of the technique, and you're gonna show us actually that you listeners are just gonna have to use your imagination, but we will be doing some video and some pictures to show folks as well through our social media. But Cerebral Artworks is specifically known for kind of you do stuff that sort of looks like the brain. I mean, you have a certain, it's not just like pretty splatters or
right.
pretty poor.
And the cells.
You know, the cells and
yeah.
nature themes that you are specifically going for that are pretty stunning.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, I try to make something that is pleasing to the eye where it's not just a hodgepodge of colors all thrown on.
Yeah.
I try to not overdo with too many colors. I try to add in some elements that kind of break up the color as well, so it's gives it some interest, and it's not just a flat piece of canvas with color.
Right.
The cells that you were mentioning, those are synonymous with fluid pouring. It's what everybody kind of achieves or wants to achieve ultimately as a goal. So I've kind of perfected a way of doing cells that are a little different than everybody else. Mm. And they're called cells because that's exactly what they look like, cells under a microscope
yeah.
kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's funny, I've had lots of Instagram people love it, but then there's every once in a while people, I don't know if there's an actual phobia term for it, but where people don't like circles. I have learned that through this process.
They don't like circles.
Circles or round shapes. It's an actual, there's a term for it. I can't remember what it is, but...
Huh.
Yeah, so it kind of freaks them out a little bit.
Never heard of that.
Yeah, I know.
That's funny.
It's something, yeah.
They must not be big sports fans, I guess. They'd be like, oh my gosh, it's horrible. So I think it's really cool, the stuff you do with the brain and the cells with your technique, because there's that element of like a little bit of randomness, a little bit not fully in control of how it's going to turn out. You can guide it to a certain extent, but that's very like nature, right? I mean, like
yeah.
if you were going to draw a picture of a cell and you would, like, let's say you're a great artist, let's say I'm a great artist, that's more hypothetical. then, you know, and I could draw like a very beautiful drawing, like a perfect cell, but that wouldn't be true to nature because that's not what cells look like
right.
you said under the microscope.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can control it a little bit where they are
yeah.
In certain techniques, but for the most part, I mean, you can never redo it twice. They mm-hmm. always will come up different. The colors will always pop through differently. There's times where I've tried to put different things and repeat it in another, and it just can't be done.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just the nature of pouring.
Yeah.
And, you know, the idea of having something kind of just natural and organic, it definitely is part of the pouring process. Yeah.
Well, why don't you show us a little bit of
okay.
your
yeah,
process?
Yeah,
and what
definitely.
It
Poor table?
Corner of your house.
Yeah.
Your corner studio. Pour table, you call it?
Yeah.
Okay, so
it's kind of a catch basin. You definitely, if you're doing this, you want to do it over an area that is covered with plastic or newspapers, because you're going to have a lot of excess paint that comes off the edges of your canvas or whatever you're pouring on.
Sure.
So definitely want to clean an area where you can clean it easily. Yeah, you don't want to do it over your good dining room table.
Yeah, sure. I mean, but it might improve the...
Well, you never know. Yeah, unless it's one you want to pour on and change it up a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and start.
Yeah, so what are you doing?
Okay, so essentially what I'm going to do is... I've already chosen some colors here. You want to pick colors that... You don't want to end up making mud. So you don't want to, it's back to, elementary where you learned your primary colors.
Right.
And you don't want to mix yellow and purple. You'll get brown, green and red. You'll get brown. So you kind of have to choose colors thoughtfully so that when these all kind of blend together on your canvas after pouring them out, you're not going to get mud.
Okay.
Or just off-putting colors. Sometimes they'll make grays and stuff. So I typically will pick out maybe 3-4 colors, depending on the size of the canvas. I typically always add white as a base to help with the cells show through when they come up, which is probably super confusing without seeing it. But
yeah, I have no idea what you're talking about right now, Cheryl.
Yeah. So I've lined up all these colors in the order I want to pour them.
Okay, we've got a blue, a purple, a yellowish.
Yeah, kind of a mustard. Like a... This is actually copper, so it's copper. Metallic.
Okay.
So metallics are really cool when it dries. It really pops through. When you first pour them, you don't see the metallic so well, but when they dry, it really sparkles on the canvas.
Yeah, so you just melted down a bunch of pennies for that.
Yeah, right? all of these... little pour cups of the colors. Essentially, it's a fluid acrylic paint mixed with some pouring medium, and then I also put in just a little bit of glue. The pouring medium helps thin it out, allows it to kind of spread across the canvas. When it dries, it helps with it not cracking.
Okay.
Because that can be a big issue with this, because you're dealing with a lot of paint, and if it's too thick, it will crack.
Yeah.
So you have to make sure you pour off enough on the edges and kind of get an even level of paint across your board.
Okay.
And so you just want to stir that up and mix it really well. Oh, and the glue, actually, it's there as like a binder to help keep it all together, keep your paint from not separating and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And thicken up just a hair, too. You want the consistency to be kind of like a pancake batter or like honey. You don't want it too runny and you don't want it too thick that it won't spread.
Okay.
So I'm going to go ahead and add some colors to my cup.
You have a set up here. You have 3 cups on top of your wood canvas here.
Yeah. And these are called your pour cup. I'm going to be doing a flip cup. So in doing a flip cup, you want to put all your colors in backwards.
Okay.
Because the first color in is the last color out, because I'm going to be flipping it.
Oh, okay.
And that'll make more sense here in a second. So I'm going to add in...
It's going to look a little bit like those kind of sand projects.
Yeah, yeah, where you layer it and...
Yeah.
So I'm adding a little bit of that copper on top of the white. This is like probably watching...
And you're... Watching paint.
Water boil.
Watching paint. Not dry, but paint pour.
Exactly.
And you got surgical gloves on.
Yeah, a lot of artists, they don't. I'm kind of a neat freak. I hate my hands being dirty, so I...
You picked the wrong job.
Right.
Maybe, just going to say it.
So this is the magic here. This is basically silicone oil.
Oh, she just pulled out a wand, people.
Yeah.
This is... Okay,
interesting. There's sparkles around it, right? It is just like you can use WD-40 and spray it in a cup and just take like a drop out of it.
Okay. Totally trying this when I get home.
It's like treadmill oil. And then others who don't have access maybe to this, I get a lot of stuff on Amazon, but even the art stores are starting to carry this now that this is becoming more popular.
Cool.
But you can use hair serum oil,
mm-hmm.
Which so you can just go to the grocery store and get it. It's super easy. It does not take very much. you put in too much, it will make everything kind of just spread all weird. And I usually only put a drop of oil in maybe one or two colors. Okay. It does not take very much. So that's all the paint. So then, I'll show you two ways that you can flip a cup.
Okay.
If you're really fast and quick, you can just flip it with your hand.
Okay.
Okay. Wait. Like that.
Oh. I didn't get the video.
Well, that's here, okay. I'll show you this way. This is basically just a painter's like little spatula thing.
Yeah.
So this is cool because all you have to do is just do it like that.
Okay.
And then you don't lose any. You can wipe the extra on there. Do you want me to do another flip?
Yeah, do the cool one.
Okay, you got
to don't ruin my recorder.
It's going to be quick.
Okay, it's ready. Hey, cool.
There you go.
Yeah.
I'm making you nervous with your recorder.
A little bit, yeah. You said it was safe over there. I don't know why I believe anymore.
Well, I'm going to go over here and do all the pouring. So you can let this sit for a little bit with all the paint running down the cup onto your canvas.
Mm-hmm.
The more you let it sit, the more it's going to kind of mix in there. You can tap the top a little bit to help all the paint come down the sides. But for the most part, it comes down pretty quick. And then essentially what you're going to do is pull this cup backwards and the paint will come out.
Hmm.
And then you're going to pull
this
one.
That looks so cool.
Backwards. You already got cells forming there. So this is how you make the cells pop. You have to use a kitchen torch, chef's torch, creme brulee torch.
Okay.
I've seen people even use their full-on propane tank torches.
I wonder
torches.
Why she got so excited all of a sudden. You like this part.
Fire.
Yes.
So you got to take a light hand with it. You don't want to get it too close and burn the paint. You want to keep it moving. I usually do it about 4 inches away.
Right.
But you're just going to keep... There's some bubbles in here you can pop while you're... bringing the cells out too, but you just want to keep moving it around, and slowly it heats up the silicone and it brings it to the surface through the different layers of paint color, and that is what's creating the cell. It's the silicone pushing through the paint and spreading it, and then it makes the rings.
I'll be honest with you, I have no idea what you're saying, but it sounds really cool. No, but it does. It's amazing that it does look like cells are forming.
Yeah, so yeah, every one so of these cool. little round circles is a speck of the silicone oil that was in the bottom coming to the surface.
Yeah.
And it pushes that paint in like cylindrical rings, creating the circles.
If I had topophobia, I'd be so freaking scared out right now. Yeah, it's so freaking out.
And you can kind of go back a little bit if there's some areas where, see it, you can get some more. I mean, you can go pretty crazy with it. Ooh, I like, see, you never know what's going to come through. I love this here. That's really cool.
Hmm.
Usually in about 12 hours, well, sometimes even 8,
yeah.
You can move it to an area to dry. That's why I like this table, because I can make several at one time and just leave them.
Mm.
Cool. But yeah, it's that's
awesome.
The way to pour.
Very cool. I love it. Cool. Well, thanks so much for showing us and
for
talking to
absolutely.
Us today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
I love it. It's been really interesting. Can you tell folks where they can find you online and follow you on social media?
Yeah, I have an Instagram page, Cerebral Artworks, and there's lots of videos on there of how I do my pouring and different tips and things like that. And then I have a website too, cerebralartworks.com, where I sell a lot of my art. I also have art up in our local bakery here at Baker's Prairie Bakery.
Right.
Where you can see it in person and what it looks like.
Yeah, that's actually where I first saw your work was in there. So.
Yeah. We actually are doing classes in there as well.
Oh, cool.
So we have one coming up October 13th, I believe it is, Sunday.
Oh, awesome.
We're going to do a couple of cool little fall projects and some Christmas holiday projects too. So you can learn all of this.
Very, very cool. So definitely check her out on Instagram and social media. If you are afraid of circles, you might want to not do that, but at least consider it. Thanks so much again, Cheryl. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to take a quick break. Stay tuned. And and people can find you on your website or just give you a call?
Yeah, they can go to findtheadvantage.com or call 266-5800, obviously 503 area code. And we love to chit-chat, and we have, you know, 8 or 9 different loan officers here in the Canby office that would love to sit down with somebody and work with them.
Cool. Thanks, Derek.
Derek Hill, NMLS number 50183, Advantage Mortgage, NMLS number 177059, Equal Housing Opportunity.
Joining us on the line now is Jennifer Silbernagel. She is the Title I reading instructor at Knight Elementary School. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, Tyler.
Why don't you start by telling us how school has been going so far? You guys are back at it for the first couple weeks now after the holidays.
Yeah, this is our first week back from break. It's always a little bit of a brutal reentry for everybody, but I think we're getting into the swing of it now towards the end of the week.
Oh, I remember. I remember. It was as a student, not as a teacher, but yeah.
Yeah.
And what do you do as a Title I reading instructor or specialist, I guess is the title, sorry.
Yeah, that's fine. So I do a little bit of everything around here. My main job is to support students who may need a little bit of extra help in reading. So I run small groups throughout the day in my classroom from grades kindergarten through sixth grade. Most groups are 3 to 6 kids, and we just go over exactly what students are struggling with or what they may need some extra support with, whether it's reading and then understanding what they've read, if it's actually like what sound a letter makes and then using that sound while they're reading. Mm. And in addition to that, I also get to plan some really fun family nights centered around reading and school for our family.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. So that is really cool and sounds like a really important work. That's not at all what I thought when I heard Title I reading. I thought you just help the kids like with one title, like if they can't pronounce, you know, like a Leo Tolstoy, you know, title of a book, like you help them, but just one time and then you have to move on to someone else. So it's not like that.
A little different.
All. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. No, it's fun. And the other thing that I enjoy is I really get to see kids grow, because a student who needs help in October may not need help by the time February rolls around, and then they just don't come to my groups anymore. They stay in their regular classroom all day long.
That's great.
It's really fun to see growth and to help kids out.
Yeah. And even the ones that stay, I'm sure, you know, it changes, like they grow in certain areas and they, you know, find new challenges there or whatever, but it's not the same stuff every day.
Exactly. Yeah. And then I feel kind of selfish saying this, but then I get to even have a different level of connection with those kids, because I may see them multiple years in a row, and I get a different experience with those kids than a classroom teacher does who has them for 9 months.
Yeah.
You know, I a different teacher-student relationship when you have multiple years with the same student.
Yeah. Reading is so important, huh?
Yeah, just a little.
Yeah.
And I've learned so much about it teaching it, you know, just so much more than I used to. I think I drive my husband crazy with some of the different rules and little things I've learned with teaching reading. So.
Yeah. I think that we, you know, we've kind of, in a lot of ways, especially as adults and with new technology, a lot of us, and this is coming from someone who has a background in, you know, print and print journalism, but we live in a bookless and largely a paperless world, you know, but even still, we read all the time. I mean, we cannot interact effectively with in our world, even on social media and stuff, you know, even just liking grandma's, you know, post from the potluck or whatever without reading.
Yeah.
It's so important in our jobs, in our pleasure, you know, in our off time. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's really important, and especially too, I mean, you talk about the technology piece, I always say kind of the other connected piece to reading is writing, because if you don't understand the sounds that, you know, the words that the letters are making, you're not going to be able to use those letters in your writing as well, and that's where that spelling piece is really connected with and, you know, think of typing and Facebook and some of those things right. with our grammar and spelling, that's all connected, and it's a way of effectively communicating.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And how effective the communication is on Facebook varies sometimes, but yeah, it is. Uh-huh. Well, thank you so just much for the work that you do, and we're actually going to talk as well about, you mentioned kind of some fun family nights that you're organizing. I gather that there's a couple things going on at a couple of our elementary schools, one of them being night around common reading nights?
Yeah, it's a really exciting program. It actually started, Peggy Garner, the reading teacher over at Lee Elementary, actually started the program. I think she brought it from somewhere else when she first came to Canby with her previous school district. So we started, it's called Book in Common. Other districts do it as well. There it's called One School, One Book.
Okay.
But it's the same premise, the exact same premise. The idea is that every family receives the same book, and the school provides a reading schedule, and everybody reads the book together. So Monday night we read chapter one, Tuesday night we read chapter two, and you follow the reading schedule until the book is completed, and then there's usually some sort of woohoo celebration, we finished the book.
Yeah, cool. And what is the purpose of it?
The purpose, I mean, there's a couple different reasons. Obviously, the biggest one is to just get people reading and excited about reading. You know, like you've said so often, with technology and things like that, I think families are spending less time sitting down and opening up an actual book together. Mm-hmm. And we know not just the enjoyment of reading, but also the language piece, like sitting around and talking as a family. And as you read good books, you can often make connections to your own life or to the world. And being able to have families sit around and read a book and then make those connections, I'm getting chills kind of telling you this, but to me, that's a really powerful connection, being able to have that with not only a book, but with your family.
Yeah, yeah, that's really cool.
The other big benefit, I think, is our whole school, all, you know, 300 of us are reading the exact same thing. And so you hear people talking about it in the hallways, different grades at, you know, recess or lunch, and it just really, not only are you giving families a connection, hopefully, but you're uniting your school for those 3 to 4 weeks.
Awesome. So what are the books that you guys are doing? I understand that Knight is doing a different one from Lee.
Yeah, we've never gotten on the same exact one at the same time. I think that would be really fun. We just haven't.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of planning and coordination. We just haven't gotten there yet. I think this is our closest year. We're doing a book called The World According to Humphrey, and it's by Betty Briney. And it's about the idea of a third grade classroom through the eyes of their class pet, a hamster named Humphrey. I think Lee this year is doing The Mouse and the Motorcycle, which I find funny that we're doing a hamster and they're doing a mouse. But
right. I know. I did notice that. I was like, was that on purpose? Or
that was not on purpose. That was purely accidental.
Yeah, yeah. So when you started to say world according to, I thought you were going to say GARP, which I thought would be maybe a little old for the elementary, a little advanced for the elementary.
It's just a little, yeah, it's a little bit of a play on that, I think, but it's an adorable book. My own daughter, who goes to a different school, her teacher, my up to 91, and her teacher, Mrs. Oyer, read it aloud to them, I think, last year. I had already read it, but my daughter came home and was like, Mom, I love this book, and proceeded to read, her and my husband read aloud the entire rest of the series together. There's like 12 books in the series, and my husband kept saying,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, and that's part of the reason why we chose this book, is we're hoping that it excites kids and families, and they read the rest of the series. But my family even said, or my husband said, as far as reading a lot of book goes, this one is good. Like, I'm enjoying this. I can do this. So I'm hoping that that continues with other families.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not familiar with that one. I know Mouse and the Motorcycle. That's Beverly Cleary, yeah?
Yep.
Okay, an older book, which I actually read when I was a kid. A great book. Only 3 books, if I remember. So the families that get into that one might not be quite the commitment.
Yeah, it's a little bit shorter. Yeah, and we've done classic books in the past. Like, our first year we did Because of Winn-Dixie. And then
we read that one too.
Matilda last year. We've done some classics. And yeah, it's really great because each year the Canby Education Foundation comes along and helps us and that helps us. They purchase all the books for us, so it's a really great partnership.
That's awesome. Yeah, and I understand that there was the local bookstore, the Book Nook, also helped in some way with discounts? Or?
Yeah, this year I reached out. You know, we get the money granted to us through Cambie Education Foundation, and then it's kind of up to me and then Peggy over at Lee to find the best deal we can find. This year I found a great deal online, but I thought, you know, I'm going to check with the Book Nook and just see. And I emailed them and I talked with Megan, and she actually came in cheaper than the best place I could find online. And she really, you know, in our talking, she really wanted to partner with us in this. I mean, she's participating in our family night when we're done. So she really wanted to come alongside as a partner in that. To me, is even more exciting. We've got these two great community organizations, the Cambie Education Foundation and the Book Nook, who are helping out. You know, they're excited about it just like we are.
Yeah, yeah, that's awesome. Well, I know that education and kids reading and kids books is something that's so important to Megan Waterman, one of the owners over there.
Yeah.
So I'm not surprised at all to hear that. But it is so cool. I mean, like, obviously, go with the best price, you know, no matter what. If when you're using donated funds and it's for education, I mean, you got to do what you got to do. But for, you know, for it to be the best price anyway, it's pretty awesome.
She really stepped up, which was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, and then to have the chance to, you know, support local as well as, you know, it's a local fundraiser, it stays local, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Jennifer, for your time and, again, for your work with our kids. It does sound like a really neat promotion, and my daughter's going into school coming up next year, so maybe we'll wind up in something like this. So.
You never know. It's a pretty exciting thing. You could do it on your own, even if you're not in a school that does it. Just pick a book and read as a family.
Well, you got to get it going at Caris. I think that's where we're going to be.
Yeah, I don't think they do it yet. We've always talked, us reading teachers get together, and we've had discussions about trying to do it all at the same time and do the same book. It's just, it's a big commitment for a school to take on, and every school kind of already has their own big things that they do. So maybe someday, it's a dream. We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of funny because the whole night is about, let's get everyone in the school reading the same book, and then you go to another school and they're like, no, we want to do something different.
Yeah, I know, it's a little different, but someday we'll all get on the same page at the same time.
Absolutely. Well, thanks so much, Jennifer, again, and have a great week.
Great. Thank you so much, Tyler.
Welcome to the Cambie Now Community Board, where you're in charge. That's right, this is where we share your news with our listeners. Everything from birth announcements, birthdays and obituaries, to local events and accomplishments. If you're hashtag Cambie Proud, let us celebrate with you. Cambie High School Theater will be collecting donations this week for their new hygiene project. No, it's not an intervention trying to get you guys at the Cambie Now podcast to take a shower. Tyler and Frankie are grown men. They'll shower when they feel like it. No, this is a charitable effort collecting pads, basic toiletries, and hygiene products such as deodorant, lotion, soap, shampoo, socks, etc. They are only collecting products that are packaged, unopened, and, I can't believe this has to be said, but unused. They are also not accepting tampons, unused or otherwise. Donation drop-off spots are by the front office at Cambie High School and in the Cambie Community Library. The items are being collected for the Join PDX shelter in Portland, while they will be offered to women in need. We have been on the Cambie Now Facebook group, so we know that many of you have lots of ideas about how the city should be run. Well, now's your chance. There are lots of openings on local boards and committees, and those who can are encouraged to serve. Openings include the Bike and Pedestrian Committee, City Budget Committee, Cambie Utility Board, Transit Advisory Committee, and Urban Renewal Agency Budget Committee. For more information or how to apply, contact City Recorder Melissa Bissett at bissettm@cambieoregon.gov. You can also find more details on the city's website. outside of the city government, there are numerous local nonprofits and other boards you can serve on, including Friends of the Cambie Public Library, which provides funding for all of the educational and social programming that happens at the library throughout the year. For more information, contact cambiefol@gmail.com. The Cambie Heritage and Landmark Commission, HLC, is holding a public meeting on January 22nd from 5:30 to 7 p.m. in the Cambie Library's Willamette Room. This meeting will review findings of the recent public survey on preserving Cambie's heritage and gather additional public input. The meeting will give people an opportunity to share their reaction to the survey results and their ideas about how the city should preserve its past. The survey and the public meeting are part of the HLC's Comprehensive Historic Preservation Initiative. Using National Park Service funding obtained through the State Historic Preservation Organization and a grant from the Kinsman Foundation, the HLC has contracted with Northwest Vernacular, NWV, a historic preservation consulting firm, to do this work. Per Carol Palmer, HLC project leader, the results of the survey and the input we receive at the public meeting will shape the recommendations that are included in the final report. That report will be presented to the City Council in May. Baker Prairie Middle School is hosting a culture night from 6 to 8 p.m. January 22nd. In a flyer, organizers say the event is to celebrate the beautiful uniqueness of our world, which is a diverse canvas full of traditions, personalities, cultures, and people. If you'd like to be part of this event, please contact Amy Marsh, amy.marsh, M-A-R-S-H, at cambie.k12.or.us. Contact Amy with the country or culture you would like to represent. Each participant group is asked to host a simple booth that displays interesting facts, pictures, items that represent their culture, and one takeaway, such as a sample snack, a craft, a dance step, etc. Thank you for considering sharing your beauty with your community. Clackamas Community College will host a STEM, that's Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics, talk on January 23rd, noon to 1 p.m. Many vertebrate groups such as mammals and reptiles have weaponized skulls to offer defense against predators. Creatures under the sea also have evolved skulls for defense. Thaddeus Busser, a graduate student of Oregon State University's Department of Fisheries and Wildlife, will lead the STEM talk, which focuses on cranial weaponry of aquatic vertebrate. The discussion will emphasize the shape and utility of spines in sculpin fish, a type of bottom-dwelling fish. The STEM talk will take place in McLaughlin Hall on the Oregon City campus, 19600 Malala Ave. Guests are invited to a meet and greet at 11:30 a.m. before the discussion begins. This event is free and open to the public.
The Cambie Now podcast is brought to you in part by the Wild Hair Saloon, where Cambie goes to eat and have fun. Lifelong Cambie residents Darren and Joan Monin founded the Wild Hair 16 years ago, and as their business has grown and expanded, they've continued to give back to the community they love. They're one of the biggest supporters of school activities, youth sports, local events, and even this podcast. They have a heart for Cambie, plain and simple.
They also have some of the best food and drinks on the planet.
Did I forget to mention that? No,
it's all right. I'm going to mention it. It's no accident that residents voted them the best restaurant and best service through the Cambie Area Chamber of Commerce last year. Happy hour daily from 3 to 6. Kids eat free on Mondays, live music and breakfast on the weekends. And they have great salads and other healthy options to help you keep your New Year's resolutions. Check them out just off of Highway 99E next to the Space Age in Cambie at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City, or on their website, thewildhairsaloon.net. The Cambie Now podcast is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Cambie by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. Find more of her work at olivia13.com.
The Cambie Now podcast is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The Cambie Now podcast is a production of Now Hear This Studios, Cambie's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.